Well, I think, you know, Jesse Jackson always ends his speeches with keep hope alive. That's because you can lose everything, but if you have hope, you still got a chance. You still got a fighting chance. I've seen people in African societies who don't literally have a pot to piss in. They don't have any material wealth, but they still have hope. They still have dignity. They'll stand up and look you in the eye and address you as a human being, as an equal. So we have to remember there's no solution to this as individuals. We are not isolated units. We are not billiard balls, right? We are like ants and wolves and other social beings. We exist in social matrices, right, in relationships with other human beings. It's community that's going to save us. And in fact, that community building is going on. The reason there's a sense of crisis in the world is because the alternative paradigm, the life values, nonviolence, God doesn't take sides paradigm, is gaining strength every minute, every day, every week. Now, you got to remember that a lot of us, our consciousness is shaped by the corporate media. The corporate media are not information media. They are not entertainment media. They are commercial media. They exist to make money. And they make money not by selling tires and toothpaste to us. They exist by selling us access to our brains to the corporate advertisers. We are not the consumers. We are the product being sold. It's like slavery. Slavery was the marketing of human bodies. This is the marketing of human minds. That's why it's so vacuous. People say, why is it all just crap? It's crap because they don't want people to develop analytical skills. So at Global Exchange, we do a two-track strategy. We're trying to penetrate the corporate media with an alternative message, and you can get into the Washington Post or the New York Times. I'm not saying it's easy. It's hard, but you can do it. But then the other is the alternative media, the local newspapers, the indie media centers, the pamphlets, the books we publish ourselves, the forums like this, et cetera, et cetera. These things are going on all around. I was just a few days ago in Knoxville, Tennessee. That we think, oh, you know, between the coasts, there's nothing out there. There's radical people. There's progressive people. There's the Kansas Action Network. When I spoke in Wichita, Kansas, we had like 80-some people in the room, not for a meeting like this. It was a dialogue. It was a strategy session about building the kind of Seattle grassroots global revolution kind of movement. So what we're in is the early stages of the first ever global revolution. All revolutions to date have been national revolutions that sought to seize state power in the capital city. Look at the Zapatistas when they rose up in Mexico in early 94. They didn't say we want to seize power in Mexico City. They said we are rising up against neoliberalism, the neoliberal model, the money values model. Their children were starving and their forests were being cut down. Who would, as Brecht said, the question isn't why does a man whose children are starving rebel? The question is why doesn't he rebel? Right? And that rebellion is going on. Dan Rather is not going to tell us about it. It's not in his interest. Dan Rather says, whatever President Bush wants me to do, I'll do. So we know where he's at, you know, and we're not going to rely on him to give us a perspective on reality, right? So I would just like to caution, too, you know, this question about judging people's culture by their physical package. I think that's a bit questionable. We have to be really into getting at what is in people's souls, right? What's inside them? What motivates them? By their deeds, you will know them. What we need as part of the movement is separation. You know, we have separation of church and state. That took centuries. The people who started the movement to separate church and state did not see, and they probably knew they weren't going to see, the end result of their movement. But they fought like hell to separate church and state because they saw all the evils of the Holy Roman Empire and the Crusades and all this other crap that went on. So they struggled for centuries and they achieved, God bless them, they achieved separation of church and state. What we have to achieve, contradictory statement, we're all contradictory, right? Happy, sad, on and off, yes and no. That's the dance that propels it all, life and death, right? It's a cycle. So what we need is separation of corporations and the state, or separation of money and the state. Campaign finance reform, end corporate lobbying, end corporate welfare. Build a firewall between money and the state, just like we did with church and state. Now, unfortunately, we got people in the White House who don't buy even church and state being separated. So, you know, good. I mean, think, you know, we got this crisis going on where the pivot is oil money, right? I mean, if the major export of the Middle East were broccoli, would any of this shit be going on? I don't think so. And look at the three people in the three foreign policymakers in the White House: Bush oil money, Cheney oil money, Condoleezza Rice on the board of Chevron. They were going to name a tanker after her. God help us. These are people who are not existentially equipped to get us out of this, okay? What they are doing is, by their blundering, relying on things like cruise missiles and aircraft carriers and Green Berets and things like that, is they are taking a very tiny minority sect that is a minority of a minority of a minority. They are a far-right minority of the Wahhabi Sunni brand of Islam, and they are turning these people into gods, into icons, into heroes, that now there's all sorts of young, frustrated young males throughout the 1.2 billion Muslims of the world who see these guys as equivalent to the great superpower America that has sucked their resources out of their countries for so many decades. And you know, not promoted democracy, not promoted justice, et cetera. So there's all these T-shirts and posters with Bin Laden's face on it. You know, well, if that's not stupid, I don't know what is. You know, yeah, let's make him into a hero. The tactics. Somebody raised this question of violence, nonviolence. What's going on in the movement is very good thing. There's a lot of rectification and outreach in the movement to that small minority of the global justice movement that thinks you smash capitalism one window at a time. You know, let's be clear on property destruction. The Boston Tea Party was property destruction. You know, it's not about relationship between people and things. Oh, property destruction, yes or no? Well, no, it depends on the situation and who's making this decision and how is it arrived at. The priests and nuns who poured blood on draft records, that's property destruction. The priests and nuns who went onto missile silos and banged dents in missiles, that's property destruction. But it's a different kind of property destruction. It's not a small minority coming up to a huge mass of people saying, hey, we're going to break stuff and bring the cops down on you and have the media portray you terribly, right? In Washington a few weeks ago at the big protests, the overwhelming majority, 99.9% of the protests, were totally nonviolent. Nonviolence, not as a tactic, it's like what we train in the ruckus training camps. It's nonviolence as a spiritual approach to all of life, not a tactic that's useful in a demonstration, right? It has to come from a spiritually rooted place. So we have these big demonstrations, thousands, tens of thousands of people out in the street, and there's a few guys. It's always guys. This is testosterone poisoning, okay? It's testosterone poisoning. They got to burn a flag. Let's burn an American flag. Yeah, at a time when people are, like, really in a sensitive place and really into this wrapping the flag around everybody, and you're going to burn it. And that's the front page photo on the Sunday Washington Post, 150,000 extra copies printed because of all the turmoil and stuff. That one picture of those misguided young revolutionaries, quote unquote, it wipes out so much work of the rest of us that are day-to-day building. But what's the cure? The cure isn't to kick their ass, right? Although we may be tempted. It's to reach out and say, hey. So what you find is, and I monitor the traffic of what's going on in the movement all the time, there's all sorts of outreach. There's anarchist literature, young anarchists like 23, 24 years old, who are writing really good stuff, very clear, light stuff about, hey, let's clean up our tactics. We come from an anti-authoritarian tradition. That's what anarchism is, right? I mean, read Bakunin and Kropotkin and Tolstoy and all those people, Chomsky. And they're coming from an anti-authoritarian place. If you come out with a small group of people in a big demonstration and start breaking stuff and throwing stuff at the cops, that's authoritarian. That's authoritarian. And people know that. So within the movement, there's a rectification process going on, reaching out across ideological boundaries and a rectification within what used to be sort of self-ghettoizing, self-marginalizing, sectarian intellectual traditions of people saying, let's all develop bouquet consciousness, okay? Like Little Richard says, all the races are God's bouquet. Let's get bouquet consciousness, not monocrop consciousness, right? Let's get rid of sectarianism. All sectarianism is bad. And the way you get out of your sectarian self-marginalization is to reach out to people in other boundaries. You will learn more in a conversation with people who disagree with you than you will talking with people who agree with you. And my answer to that, and I'll finish with this, and this is like basic orientation, because conversation is the basic thing. In the beginning, there was the Word, and the Word was God. Well, why Word? Because Word is the most basic aspect of the human commons that connects us and allows us to escape the isolated ego prison to the nirvana of community and togetherness and love. Big love, though. Global, planetary, species love, trans species love, life love, right? Like the Buddhist monk who went up to the hot dog salesman on the streets of New York and said, "Make me one with everything." Remember that? And when he paid him and he said, "Where's my change?" The hot dog vendor said, "Change comes from within." So what you do is, when you're talking to people, reject the banking concept of education. The banking concept of education, critiqued by Paulo Freire, the Brazilian activist scholar in Pedagogy of the Oppressed, great book, read it, it's an essential book. He says, banking concept is student, empty vessel, teacher, full vessel, shut up, I will fill you up. No. The dialogic model of education, where we come at each other, not like this, but equal, and we share. When you get taught major donor fundraising, you're always taught, get the donor to talk. Why? Because it builds respect, and it helps you know what the donor's interested in, and then you know how best to pitch them. It just makes sense. Shouldn't we treat every human being with the same kind of respect we treat millionaires that we're trying to get money away from? Shouldn't we? Right? So if we go out respectfully and address people, and let's ask people questions. That's why I did these questions that don't get asked about the so-called war. Let's go out and ask people respectful questions, listen to their answers, find what we agree with, where the overlap in the Venn diagram is, and use that as the basis of unity to create more unity, more unity, more unity. And we will make history. This will go down as the beginning of the first ever global revolution. But we have to have the same consciousness of the feminists who started the movement to get women the right to vote, the abolitionists who didn't see the end of slavery, but they started it. The I.F. Stone used to say, if you're expecting an answer to your question during your lifetime, you're not asking a big enough question. So we need that long-term perspective. Emergency heart, but long-term vision. And we'll do it. We will do it. Be confident.